welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's Reality Cast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of Reality Cast, Andrea Grimes will be on to update us on what's going on with the Texas Women's Health Program. I'll do a segment on the alleged rape in Steubenville, Ohio, and another one on the new abortion restrictions in Virginia. Kotex had a really cute 3-minute video referring to all the crazy myths throughout history about your period, none of which are true.
There were a lot of horror stories about tampons getting lost inside of you.
We were afraid of them. You would lose them in your vagina.
I sincerely believe that if you get your period and you want to use a tampon, you certainly can't do that when you're a virgin. And I was a virgin for a very long time.
I was honestly worried. I didn't use a tampon for the first 2 or 3 years.
We had a trip to Bear Mountain. My mother said, there are bears up there. And if they smell your blood from your period, they're liable to attack you. So I didn't go.
I was convinced that boys knew and that they wouldn't talk to me if they knew. And when you're 13, that's the end of the world.
The one that I remember growing up was that you shouldn't get your hair done when you had your period, which is about the dumbest thing in the world now that I think about it. For those of us who try to fight the good fight against rape, the work is really demoralizing. Standing up for a rape victim during the trial ordeal usually means facing down a sea of opposition, as loudmouth and obsessive rape apologists will look for any excuse to accuse the victim of being a lying slut just out for attention or money. Which is why the Steubenville, Ohio case feels so different, because they are generating protests that sound like this.
How do you sleep at night?
A sea of masks, joined by those both from and nearby Steubenville, all rallied in support of the 16-year-old West Virginia victim. They chanted for officials to be fired and for the town's head high school football coach to be removed in what many claim is a town cover-up to support prized athletes.
These boys are out walking around. One of them was in the county I live in. I don't want that trash walking around where I live.
For the 2 or 3 of you left out there who don't know, the protests are in response to a very suspicious situation in Steubenville, where a number of football players for a popular high school team were present at a party where a 16-year-old girl was allegedly raped, and they celebrated the rape on social networks. There appears to have been photos and videos, but only a couple have surfaced, and the suspicion is that a bunch of them were deleted to minimize the legal damage. The protesters are accusing the school and even law enforcement of either not being diligent enough to get the evidence, or in some cases, they are accusing adults of helping dispose of the evidence. 2 young men have been charged. Another tried to file a defamation lawsuit against a blogger who outed his nasty tweets about the whole thing. And not only was the lawsuit dismissed, the plaintiff had to apologize to the victim and her family. And now a video of yet another student has surfaced, where he appears to be in another room at the party where the alleged rape went down. He's arguing with a guy who appears to be upset about the whole thing, trying to argue for why it's funny and not horrifying.
That's childish.
You know that's not cool, bro.
That's like rape. It is rape.
Bro.
They raped her.
You know, did you do it? Bro.
They raped her.
This is the funniest thing.
They raped her harder than that cop raped Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction. You ever seen
it? He got up with them so quick.
They raped her quicker than Mike Tyson raped that one girl.
Oh my God.
At another point, he scolds the concerned and angry guy for trying to help the victim. The young man who is whooping it up in this video has withdrawn from Ohio State University because of the shame of all of this, and I can't say that I feel bad. This case is finally, it seems, getting people to clue into what feminists have been saying for a long time, which is that rape is a frequent crime because so many people don't treat it like it even counts as a crime. Sadly, this kind of laughing and cheering on of rape is common. Even more common is the attempts to sweep it under the rug, blame the victim, or otherwise treat it like it's a mildly unpleasant thing, but not so unpleasant that the rapist's life deserves to be upended for it. There's this polite social lie where everyone pretends to take rape seriously, but the few of us who actually do are treated like we're hysterical. But this case feels different. Like people are beginning to really clue into how the social protection of rapists actually encourages them. The protests are huge. Mainstream media is investigating allegations brought forward by Anonymous, instead of being treated like a victim or, God forbid, a hero as he would have been in the past. The guy who made this video is a pariah. And weirdly, even the people who are standing up for the old way of doing things are much fewer in number than they used to be. ABC News showed the counter-protest to the anti-rape protest, and it was just a handful of people, most of whom come across as complete idiots.
Nothing to do with the rape or whatever happened. You know, send us death threats, like, oh, you guys need lined up and shot.
It's like a, a modern-day witch hunt, you know? Everybody's assuming things, you know? It just needs to get taken to court and let the justice system handle this.
The same old excuses just don't fly in this situation. The first guy is trotting out the usual attempt to make rape sound like an isolated crime, but the extensive witnesses, the laugh it up video, the coach's response, and the social networking celebration make that sound hollow. This is a clear-cut example of how communities do bear responsibility for sexual violence. The second guy is trotting out another typical rape apologist line, demanding that discourse about sexual violence be limited to the courtroom. If there was a spree of muggings in a neighborhood, would this guy be outraged if the community came together and demanded better lighting and police response? Absolutely not. People are sick and tired of rape being treated like it's the victim's fault or being told to shut up about it. A few idiot protesters saying the same old rape apologist things isn't going to change that. I'd like to welcome Andrea Grimes to the program. Andrea is a freelance journalist who specializes in reproductive rights and works out of Texas. She's been on before to inform us about the Texas scheme to defund family planning services, especially Planned Parenthood, and I've asked her back on the show to update us on what's going on there. Welcome to RealityCast, Andrea.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
So when we last spoke, Texas had formed the Texas Women's Health Program, an underfunded and inadequate replacement for federal funding they rejected because they don't want to share it with Planned Parenthood. What's happened since then?
Well, since then, Texas has actually implemented the Texas Women's Health Program. It had waffled on implementation for a while because they were wanting to continue to receive federal funds, which they did receive until December 31st. So now the Texas Women's Health Program has gone into effect as of January 1st when federal funding ran out. So we've been under the watchful eye of the Texas WHE for about a week. And right now, the Texas Department of State Health Services has released a survey this week kind of shoring up their commitment to the new women's health program, saying that they have plenty of providers without Planned Parenthood, that they don't need Planned Parenthood, and that everything's going to be fine. In terms of lawsuits, they're actually going to be going to court on Friday in a suit filed by a Planned Parenthood client who wishes to continue in the women's health program and go to Planned Parenthood. And so the state and Planned Parenthood will make arguments for that on Friday. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
And so that's the first time that an actual patient has sued based on this.
Yes, that's correct. It is certainly not the first lawsuit that's been filed dealing with the women's health program, but it is the first one filed by an actual patient for the right to continue seeing the same doctors that she was seeing before. And as I mentioned, the Texas Women's Health Program, which has been actually functioning for about a week now, this is the first week that Planned Parenthood has not been able to participate in the program. So whatever happens in court on Friday will be vital in terms of the continuing participation in Planned Parenthood, because as I said before, they've been able to kind of participate in a contingent way, and now they've really been kicked out. So the court decision that'll come from the hearing this Friday and the ongoing hearing will really have the final say probably in what happens in the WHP.
So what's the nature of her complaint? I mean, is she saying that she's owed a right to continue seeing the doctor that she's already got, or is it about not being able to find a replacement doctor?
It really, Planned Parenthood is predominantly arguing and has argued that the problem is that the state of Texas doesn't have a right to prevent people from choosing their own providers. They've argued that state law says they don't have that right. They've argued that federal law doesn't have that right. And in the suit from the Planned Parenthood client, they're pretty much claiming the same thing, which is that according to all state and federal laws, clients deserve to be able to choose their own doctors. They are addressing to a large degree the availability issue, arguing that in addition to the fact that patients have the right to choose their own doctors, they shouldn't be burdened with finding a new doctor, particularly when there are not enough available. So the report released this week by the Department of State Health Services here that says, no, we've got plenty of doctors, it's all going to be fine, will probably play a large role in the arguments that happen in the upcoming court case.
So that's interesting because when I last spoke to you, the focus of it was largely your reporting on how Texas said they had enough providers, but they do not. They absolutely do not. Mm-hmm. How is that standing right now?
Well, so far, the Department of State Health Services here in Texas is the only entity saying that it does, in fact, have enough women's health program providers. A number of studies conducted by university researchers, by journalists like myself and other reporters in other cities have all found that there's almost no way Texas can have an adequate number of providers in the program so quickly, especially without Planned Parenthood. And the report released this week by the Department of Health Services is, I think, wildly speculative. They did not receive a response from 56% of the doctors and clinics that they asked to provide them with numbers. So they're, you know, speculating on more than half of the provider's capacity to provide services and calling that, you know, sound research. So I think their findings are really questionable.
And just to sort of recap, what are some of the, what kind of troubles did you find when you actually started to ask providers that were listed yourself if they could provide these services?
I mean, there was a range of issues. Some providers that were listed on the Texas Women's Health Program website didn't even know they were enrolled in the Texas Women's Health Program. Some absolutely were not enrolled in the Texas Women's Health Program. Others were not family planning providers in any way. You know, there were anesthesiologists and labs and ambulatory surgical centers listed. So the database that the State Health Services Department is working from is deeply flawed, and it doesn't sound like they have really sound footing in terms of their capacity to understand the job that's before them.
So to give some sort of context to this, prior to this, the Texas Women's Health Program, this sort of new entity really taking shape, Texas was already in a bad situation when it comes to family planning services and sexual health outcomes. Can you kind of give an idea of like where the state stands on that?
Yeah, in 2011, in our 82nd legislative session, the conservative legislators, of which there is a majority in Texas, as you might imagine, cut the general family planning budget in the state by two-thirds. So that meant that not only were Planned Parenthood clinics going to go out of business, but a lot of independent family planning clinics and other kind of federally qualified health centers would have to cut back on services. Family planning generally took a really big hit 2 years ago. And so when the Texas legislature meets again, it actually just convened yesterday, one of the things that they're going to have to address is whether they want to continue to slash family planning in Texas when it demonstrably creates a kind of a fiscal need, a social need. It really isn't advantageous to anyone, and I think conservative legislators here are starting to realize that, and I hope that they will address it in the upcoming kind of 2 or 3 months. But there's not a lot of reason to be optimistic other than it just makes good financial and social sense.
So they just really don't care if their STD rates and their teenage pregnancy rates and their unplanned pregnancy rates are through the roof.
No, they really don't. But more surprising is that they don't care about saving money. which of course is the big drumbeat of, you know, fiscal conservatism is, you know, we've got to be as financially sound as possible. And it's well documented that family planning programs save taxpayers' money, they save the government money, et cetera, and so on. And it seems like so far it's just really politically motivated, predominantly by men, white men who want to limit access to choice and reproductive freedom.
So since we last talked about this, the kind of specter of crisis pregnancy centers has sort of entered the picture. Can you talk a little bit about the role they play in all this?
Yeah, Rick Perry, our governor, has really championed a particular crisis pregnancy center here in Texas in Houston, but also crisis pregnancy centers generally. He has given a couple of speeches now at a place called the Source for Women, which is in Houston, and it's a very warm, fuzzy, kind of boutique-y crisis pregnancy center. You know, it's filled with pink light and furry couches. It feels like a nail salon. And he has called this kind of place the future of family planning and of the women's health program in Texas. Now, that crisis pregnancy center doesn't actually provide any medical health services yet, although they say they're working on doing so. But the state of Texas has added funding to crisis pregnancy centers increasingly over the years to the detriment of actual medical health providers. And it doesn't look like that's going to stop anytime soon. It really looks like legislators are focusing ever more on crisis pregnancy centers as a source to increase funding, especially when they're taking funds away from medical centers.
But the Texas Women's Health Program isn't giving money to them, to crisis pregnancy centers.
Not as of yet, but that is Rick Perry's hope. He has said that he hopes that they will do that in the future.
Yeah, because they just don't offer contraception, so they kind of just don't reach the standards, right?
Right, exactly. Once those kinds of places have a nurse or a doctor on staff, it may be possible for them to receive WHP funding, and they probably will.
Oof. So what's next? Yeah. What's next for reproductive rights activists in Texas?
Well, yeah, the challenge that I think we're going to face in the next few months, like I said, the legislature is now in session, and the big rallying cry at this point has been for two separate things. One is an effective ban on telemedical abortions, and second, a ban on abortions after 20 weeks. So those are kind of two separate issues being championed by conservative legislators that I think reproductive justice people here in Texas are really going to be forced to try to combat, rally against. I don't know kind of if what the organization in terms of countering that is just yet. I think a lot of people are still getting their ducks in a row, and it's hard to tell until we've, you know, seeing the legislation and the kind of proposed laws, but those are the two issues that are going to come up in the next probably 90 days.
My guest today has been Andrea Grimes. You can follow her reporting on the subject here at RH Reality Check. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Andrea, and letting us know about the cutting edge of anti-choice state movements.
Absolutely. I wish I didn't have to, but thanks for having me.
Well, at least not all 50 states in our union are run by crazy misogynists. That's what I keep telling myself when I do one segment after another about state officials who were usually elected by portraying themselves as jobs-oriented moderates, get into office and use their new powers to mount a full-blown assault on women's rights. This segment will focus on Virginia. And I don't want to get anyone down, but the reality is this. The anti-choicers got their way by virtue of their rabid dog obsession with controlling women. Last year, the words transvaginal created a major uproar over Virginia's attempt to run their abortion providers out of the state. It upset the anti-choicers briefly, but they waited until the uproar was over and did it anyway. NPR has a report.
In December, McDonnell issued a prepared statement saying the law will help ensure the safety of all patients. 20 clinics in Virginia have to follow the new rules. In part, they say public hallways must be at least 5 feet wide, exam rooms must be at least 80 square feet, and there must be at least 4 parking spaces for each surgical room and additional staff spaces. Julie Rickelman with the Center for Reproductive Rights says the law will force many clinics to rebuild or close.
Ah, yeah, the big anti-choice lie of late. They believe women who have abortions are filthy sluts who kill babies so they can continue their wicked fornicating ways. But they're also concerned about women's health. So concerned, in fact, that they're going to eliminate all access to safe abortions so that women can go with the healthy coat hanger in the bathroom option. Is there any worse misogyny than the kind that pretends not to be misogyny? The obligatory anti-choice nut they interviewed also pushed the lie that they only want to force you to give birth because they care.
But the president of the Virginia Society for Human Life, Olivia Gans Turner, says the new clinic rules are necessary. She cites an infamous Philadelphia clinic run by Kermit Gosnell, which state officials called a house of horrors. Gosnell was charged with 8 counts of murder after at least one woman and 7 infants died in his office.
Are they all quite as bad as Gosnell? Perhaps not. But if one woman dies in a facility that could otherwise have been regulated and cared for in a way that provided some measure of protection, who is going to stand for justice for those women if it isn't the states and their responsibility under their Board of Health?
Let's be clear. Gosnell was already operating outside of the law, which is, duh, why he got arrested. Let's also be clear about this. This woman is not outraged about filthy clinics that hurt women. If she was, she would be fighting to make sure abortion is safe, legal, and affordable for all women. She actually wants to create a situation where thousands of Gosnells pop up, criminals who are willing to take advantage of desperate women seeking abortion on the black market. The absolute best way to keep men like Gosnell from operating is for women to have access to safe, legal providers. Olivia Gans Turner wants it so that women have to turn to criminal providers operating in shady circumstances, because as much as she feigns concern for women, she wants those dirty sluts to pay for their sexual activity by having to consort with criminals. The reality is that the legal clinics in Virginia are already safe, and wider doors and more parking spaces won't make them safer.
Elizabeth Nash with the Guttmacher Institute calls the clinic building codes a political maneuver.
They're not about health and they're not about safety. It's a way to bypass a court case to overturn Roe v. Wade and simply eliminate access by regulating abortion providers out of business.
Roe v. Wade is the decision that legalized abortion 40 years ago this month. In Virginia, even though the governor has signed the law, a 2-month public comment period is just beginning. Still, that's unlikely to change any of the new clinic rules.
Of course it won't. The Virginia state government became the center of a national outrage, but they did this anyway. They don't care one little tiny bit about what the public thinks about their attempts to drive abortion onto the black market. Their belief that women who have non-procreative sex are dirty sluts who need to be punished is unpopular, and they know it, and they don't care. They're going to find a way to punish them anyway.
When I get down, you know I get down. When I get around, you know I get around.
And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts, the continued demonizing of 1 in 3 American women edition. Ann Coulter, and part of the conservative effort to talk about anything but gun control after the Sandy Hook massacre, went after women who had abortions.
Why can't we get a record of women who have had abortions? They get money from Planned Parenthood. They get money from Medicare, from Medicaid. Much of this is their tax subsidies. I think, you know, mothers might want to know what other women on their street have might be willing to murder a child.
Not that this needs debunking, but remember that over 60% of women who have had abortions already have children, and having to take care of the children they already have is a major reason women cite for having abortions. Not that Coulter doesn't probably already know this. She just wants to out women who have abortions so that everyone can whisper about what a slut they are, or worse, so terrorists can terrorize them.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.